Exploitation of exploitation.
Exploit nation.
Yeah. Exploit nation.
Exploit Nation coming live and in color. Don't diss this shit or we'll bum rush your mother. Listen what I'm saying, it's for real, not playing. Uncle Bill is the man, now hit your knees and start praying. Got power like the bear, but ass all thick and fat. Put two and two together, and that's where it's at.
Yeah.
You count the stars while you guzzle the pee. Hope you like to look at who is, cause that's all you gonna see.
We are the nation of exploitation.
Exploit Nation. Harder than a rock and he can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. The boys from the hood are on the MIC, spitting out the rhymes of JC Ice and Wolfie D. ZK is the boss, crossing T's and dotting I's. He tells the truth, the whole truth, and never tells a lie.
Land of the Rising Sun, the Knotbulls. It's the Orient Express.
Guinea big guns of the Holy.
So how's everybody doing out there?
Guinea big
We're going somewhere that nobody else hardly goes, Uncle Bill. There's not too many people that talk about these movies.
No.
But it's a perfect episode of Exploit Nation to bring, because this is definitely exploitation cinema at its best or worst.
What everybody think about our new intro? I think that pretty much sums up.
That's right. We're professional here. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I went and learned Japanese just for this show.
Smells like yum yum sauce in here, Phantasmat. Get it, pig. Hit that like button. That's right, Chris C. He's got it. Exploit Nation. Yeah. Exploit Nation Christmas special. Uncle Bill's got his Christmas hat, Christmas shirt on. I got my Christmas hat. It's where it's at. The Nation of Exploitation. You got it, Justin. Antonis in the house, robot house. He loved the intro.
Robot house. It's cute.
Where did I get this shirt? Well, interesting that you said this. And this is the new acid wash black shirt. Look at that, man. Look how fucking, yeah, you can get it. Shop.deadpit.com for the guinea pig. Guinea pig.
Mr. Miyagi's a huge fan of the guinea pig series.
Yeah. So, guinea pig movies. We're going to be talking about that a little bit tonight.
Oh, Lord.
We went back and watched all of the guinea pig goo films.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, if you want to call them films. But it was kind of like a visiting an old friend. Me, Uncle Bill, mm-hmm. really going back and taking a look at the guinea pig movies.
Yeah, I had that same feeling that I did back 10, 15 years ago when we first watched it, which is what the fuck am I watching and why throughout the entire like reign of these movies.
And we'll be talking about the availability of these films as well, because they are not commercially available and have not been commercially available for many years.
No.
But if you go to Sloppy Second Sales, that's where I got this one for like $11. This is pretty much an exact copy of that box set that came out.
I wish to God I could find that, but I have no idea what's happened to it.
But yeah, they put them all on one Blu-ray. And I mean, who knows? We may... just so many labels out there today. We may see somebody attempt at re-releasing it, but you know, you don't hear a whole lot of people really clamoring for it either.
Mm-mm. I think that most people don't even know this series exists. And if they do know anything about it, they just know the whole Charlie Sheen story. And they don't connect that with like what it actually is. So I don't think a lot of people
Which
know about it.
We'll get to the Charlie Sheen's thing as well, because you know, there is a book on, I think it's kind of a fan made book, and that kind of gets into the details behind the Charlie Sheen thing.
Yeah.
There was also an issue with a serial killer in Japan in the '80s that dismembered and murdered little girls, and he was a fan of this series. So there's a lot of, I don't know, dirty laundry when it comes to the guinea pig films. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's definitely taboo in a lot of ways. So it was, I thought it was perfect though for this series of shows that Uncle Bill and company have been doing. But unfortunately, you know, not a lot of people have seen the movies.
No.
A lot of people kind of want to steer clear of them because of their reputation. So it may just be you, me, and you be tonight. Something like that.
That's a new show for us, you, me, and you be.
We'll be talking about it, though, for the next at least, you know, 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours. We'll see how long we can stretch this out, because these are not feature-length films either.
No, they're about 50 to 60 minutes each one. Well, between 45 to 60 minutes, I would say, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre to me, too, man, that this exists for a number of reasons. But so these were like, for the people that aren't familiar with the guinea pig series, these were in the mid-80s, was kind of the beginning of this. And they were small short films almost that really didn't have any description as to what you were watching, but they were basically presented, at least several of them were presented as almost like snuff films. So people would stumble upon these and you'd get them and it would be like, you know, it's just the camera turns on. There's like maybe one title screen, and then it's immediately like gets into some sort of weird like torture scenario, either with, we'll get into like all of them, but like either with a group of guys, one guy, something like that. And it was kind of like what I would imagine August Underground was to people that didn't know anything about August Underground, like when that came out. But we're talking about the mid-80s here. We're talking about at the height of all that shit that was going on in Europe with the video nasties and all that stuff. At that exact same time over in Asia, people were making something that makes all of that shit look tame.
Well, I think that they were partially sort of influenced by that as well. All of the press that they were getting for the movies that were banned at the time. You know, you mentioned the video nasties and all that. So yeah, September of 1985 was technically the very first. And here's the thing. The timeline on these movies is a little bit everywhere. Like that's kind of
shaky. Yeah.
So we're going to kind of talk about each of them. But as far as the order in which they were released with a couple of these, it's kind of up in the air. And these movies just seemingly vanished just as quick as they popped up. And I think for a couple of reasons that we mentioned, you know, the serial killer thing and the whole thing with the FBI and Charlie Sheen from the second episode. But we'll go ahead and talk about it. These movies don't have plots, essentially. They're torture movies, splatter movies. The real star of these movies, and, you know, we'll talk about it, because I really, looking at these films today, a lot of the effects in these still hold up and are still very, very well done.
Yeah, that's the bizarre thing, too, because, like, especially when we get to what's widely considered the most infamous and the second in the series, those effects, I was kind of like, man, I don't know if those have ever been topped, especially like a couple of them, like towards the end, I was like, just like, I'm not sure anybody ever did any kind of practical makeup effects that looked that good. Like, so I can kind of understand.
No, at that time period as well. And the weird thing is I don't know if anybody ever got really credited for those effects either. But we'll get into it. The first episode, and this is really more or less episodes than movies. I mean, I guess, you know, there's a couple of them over an hour, but
before we get into it though, like, I just want everybody to know that, like, there's six of these and they're basically separated into two different categories. Okay. Some of them actually have like a plot, like a over kind of arching plot, and they're made like a movie. And then the ones that everybody talks about and kind of like goes on about are the ones that are the other category, which is basically like, you know, August Underground found footage style snuff films, mm-hmm. basically. So they're going to fall into one of those two categories. And that's just something to know, like, when you go through these.
So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, guinea pig.
The farmer.
I'm sorry, I can't help myself sometimes. But the first episode, September the 4th, 1985, The Devil's Experiment. It's the debut guinea pig movie, and they actually kind of explain the whole guinea pig thing is much like a, you know, a lab rat, right? They kind of try to explain it in the beginning. This one, it's a torture movie. A group of men are just smacking the shit out of this broad, kicking her, pinching her with pliers. And you ever notice, like, a lot of the women in these movies, they're not really reacting very much. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. I'm not sure if they were told to do that or if they just were kind of like petrified by what was going on. So in watching this one, it basically just starts out like immediately with action. Like, you just see like a group of guys around this woman, and it's like a home video camera style, mm-hmm. and they're just smacking the piss out. Like, one of them just smacking the piss out of her. I can't tell if he's really smack. It looks like he is, like, but you can't really tell. Like, and then he gets out like a sock with quarters in it, and then he's like smacking her with that. Mm-hmm. And so you're just kind of like confused, like, what's going on?
They break it up into like chapters too. So chapters of abuse.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It reminded me a lot of Men Behind the Sun. Like, that was the kind of style of this. So they're like just escalating the torture, and there's really no plot, and nobody's really making a big deal out of it or anything. It's just, it's carried on like all the way through. Like, it's no big thing. Like, and yeah, even the woman's not reacting that much to it.
There's some hot oil on the skin. They pull off some fingernails.
Yep. And then the big coup de grace, like, at the end is like they put like a hook thing through her eye, which is a really hard
and it's very thing to watch. Realistic.
Yeah.
The eyeball thing is, I have no idea how the hell they did that. I mean, it looked real. It looked like, at the very least, they used like a cadaver eye or something. I don't know.
People at that time period were crazy. It wouldn't surprise me if like they did do something like that, really.
But what I'm curious about, because I don't know a whole lot about, you know, Japanese cinema and all this, and torture movies in general, though, where were we at in 85 when it comes to torture films? And definitely shot on video movies were not thing, really.
Not a big thing at all.
No. I mean, I wonder what was the inspiration for this. I know that, you know, one of the, I think that was in the second episode, the manga artist directed that one. We'll talk about that one. But I mean, yeah, as far as the whole torture thing, this is very early on for that.
Yeah. I mean, if you look back, I guess there was some precedent, like Maniac had come out in 80, And that's a cinematic film, but I mean, it's basically just about like torture and murder and things. So, I mean, I guess they were just taking a lot of the aspects out of like the lowest common denominator aspects out of these films and just putting them in snuff films. Now, had the movie Snuff came out yet? I bet it had. Where that whole movie was kind of based around the fact of like making a real snuff movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think that may have been maybe early 80s, late 70s, early
80s. Yeah, I think it wasn't. Somebody have to look it up. But like, I think that idea and that concept had kind of been around, but I don't think anybody had been able to execute it as well as this series.
Yeah, this first film from 85, directed by Satoru Ogoro.
Yep.
Or Agura. Satoru Ogoro. How about that?
Great.
What do you think of that?
It's very, this one was like very straightforward though. Like, I mean, it was, I don't know how you rate these. From 1 to 5 guinea pigs, how many guinea pigs do you give this one?
I would give this 4. I would give this a solid 4.
4 guinea pigs?
Out of the 5 guinea pig scale.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, kind of there. Kind of your typical torture porn. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, one thing I'm not curious about, though, there's not a whole lot of information about these movies as far as, I guess they debuted on VHS back then. I mean, I really don't know. I don't think these came out in a movie theater.
I'd love to think they did, though. Like,
it's interesting. Like, the company, there's two different companies that produced these. The first one did go bankrupt, I think, after like the first couple of episodes. So, yeah, I mean, I guess they were direct to video because the second one, and this is probably the most infamous one, I would think, just because of the whole Charlie Sheen thing.
Yeah.
Guinea Pig Flower of Flesh and Blood. This is the second episode, and this was just a month later, October the 7th of 85. And this is just another, like, a continuation kind of, although they go even further with the torture and mayhem with the woman here. It's always a woman.
Yeah.
By the way. Always. Yeah. This fucking guy's in a damn samurai costume, though, Uncle Bill.
Yeah. He is super creepy. I'll give him that. This one is the one where it's like, it's really still hard to watch. Like, it's really done well. And I was really looking hard to see, okay, like, where are the, you know, the flaws in it in terms of like maybe the cuts, the edits, or the, like, you know, the practical effects where you can tell that it's not. And I mean, you can see some, but not many. Like, it's done so well that, I mean, there's no way people in the 80s and 90s would ever know. Like, and here's the only, I swear to God, when I was watching, I was like, here's the only giveaway to this movie. Other than the fact, of course, that, like, it's clearly shot by somebody. But, I mean, like, the one thing that got me was the guy, the samurai guy, has clearly got, like, black paint shit on his teeth to make it look like he's got, like, rotted teeth. I'm like, why would you need to do that? Like, he's creepy enough as it is. Like, put that, you know, fake-looking shit to make him look like he's missing teeth. And, like, you can clearly tell that was on there. But, anyway, like, the effects that they use, because it's basically just this samurai guy kidnaps this woman, brings her into this lair, and like puts her on like a operating table and just like cuts her hands off, then her arms, then her legs, then like disembowels her.
Yeah.
And then in probably the funniest scene, like knocks her off, and I know this is not like funny, but it is. He like knocks her head off and it goes flying and hits a wall in like slow motion. And I just thought that's a hell of a touch right there.
Well, and the whole gimmick is too, is this guy seeing this is beautiful, right? He likes to see the severed body parts almost like they're flowers, right? He's looking at the bloom from his you know, the beautiful bloom that he's getting from this lady and aroma that she's putting out or whatever. And just some real sickening, like almost serial killer, you know, realistic sort of shit that some crazy ass would say. And yeah, someone had mentioned here that the samurais also played. I hadn't heard that. I mean, it's possible by the director and the guy that actually did the manga, book. Idishihino.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, actually we're going to get into that here shortly, Rat Hammer.
Yeah, we've got some good information about the whole Charlie Sheen thing.
But this one to me was like the most effective one because of the whole series, really. Because like when he is doing the thing, when he is like, you know, removing the arms and legs, it takes forever. It's like he's really doing it. Like it'll just show him like sawing.
And
like
again, using, the effects are very fucking very good. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like going through the whole process of that and in real time. And it's just crazy. And then it gets to the end. And I swear when I saw this, I was like, this is insane. So the severed head or whatever, that's the most realistic looking severed head that I've ever seen. Like, I don't know how the hell they did that. Like, and I'm talking about anything like the Terrifier movies, any movie where you see, I've never seen something that looked more realistic than that.
No, pretty much the entire episode. I mean, it's really remarkable considering how cheaply made the movies look otherwise. But the effects and everything, like there's another scene in this one where he's digging this girl's eyeball out with a spoon. And it's like, it's dead on, looks real, looks totally real. So, you know, the thing that happened later with Charlie Sheen, especially because that version of that movie was years before they put subtitles on it. So you didn't kind of get, I mean, some of the dialogue in it's a little goofy, so you know kind of what you're getting into.
Yeah.
But that was not available in 91 whenever Charlie Sheen saw, you know, Guinea Pig Flower of Flesh and Blood. So.
Yeah, there is information about that, too, that we found.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Merry Christmas from Parts Unknown. Been a member here on the YouTube for over 12 months. Right. So we appreciate that. Hope you're having a happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Feliz Navidad and all that good stuff. And he also become a sponsor, whatever that means, but I appreciate awesome. It. Yeah. There's all kinds of things you can do here on YouTube and,
yeah, we're not familiar with. Yeah.
Yeah. People need to clue us in on this, but, yeah, Patreon, Dead Pit on Patreon and the YouTube members, we appreciate it. But, yeah, that's the thing that's the most remarkable and I think makes this series, puts it up there on in legendary status because this is clearly a splatter film series. This is really the right. only point of these to exist, really. I mean, there's not, these movies don't have plots other than like there, here's a lady that's fucking being tortured the entire time.
Yeah. They don't, there's nothing else going on really.
But the effectiveness in this, I mean, you can totally look and I mean, I'm not even sure how the hell they did the, and when they were severing the hands and the arms and stuff, it looks so realistic and it is pretty damn disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, somebody, I don't know who did the effects for that movie, but whoever did it, man, they should have been hired to do a lot more stuff because that's crazy good, especially there towards the end, so the stuff they did. But you found information, though, that I actually read, and I thought this was fascinating, too, about, like, the whole scenario behind the Charlie Sheen thing from, like, start to finish. So if you want to read that, I think that would be cool.
Yeah, there's a book that's out that was kind of fan-made. And it has the entire story here. And we'll try to go through it. We'll see how it goes. So, 1991, Chris Gore, was a speaker and writer on the subject of independent film and had first met Charlie Sheen. Some people say that it was at a party. Others say that it was during a stag do, whatever the hell that is.
Isn't that where you watch like porn or something?
I guess. That sounds like something Charlie Sheen would do.
Yeah.
But there was an evening where Chris Gore invited Charlie Sheen over to watch this tape that he had got, Guinea Pig, the Flower, Flesh, and Blood. After hopping up the movie, to which it was unknown whether or not Gore stressed the point that it wasn't real, Sheen and Gore sat down to watch the video in question. During the viewing, Sheen was shocked and sickened by what he saw, and he honestly believed that The Flower of Flesh and Blood was a real snuff film, even though it was purely fictional. Feeling distressed and concerned, Sheen proceeded to contact the FBI and informed them that he had witnessed a video that showed a Japanese man in a samurai suit kidnap a young woman tired of bed, fill her veins with drugs that would make pain a pleasurable experience, then proceeded to dismember her slowly over the course of 3/4 of an hour. In short, Sheen had claimed that he'd seen a snuff film. This case was placed in the hands of the FBI agent Dan Codling, who contacted Sheen and informed him that an investigation led by the FBI in conjunction with Japanese authorities was to take place. The makers and producers of The Flower of Flesh and Blood. Try saying that 10 times fast, though, by the way. It's just, not easy. They were questioned by the Japanese authorities on several occasions and were forced to appear in court. Upon their summons, the filmmakers were given a chance to prove that the video was nothing more than makeup and special effects. They proceeded to show members of the court an extensive look at behind-the-scenes footage from The Flower of Flesh and Blood, where they're shown how the film was made and all the actors that were involved that were still alive and healthy before, during, and after filming took place. This footage was later spliced together as a documentary for the DVD release of The Flower and Flesh and Blood. Sheen, by this point, had waged a personal war against the series, and along with reporting the series to the Motion Picture Association of America, Sheen actively and publicly took part in making sure that the series was not imported or exported around the globe anymore. Because of this, British Customs seized several copies of the infamous series, and in one case began prosecution against a particular horror fan who attempted to have all of the series imported into England, which resulted in a 600-pound fine. However, it was made clear to the defendant that if they had found The Flower of Flesh and Blood to be a real snuff film and not fake, they would have sentenced him to serve time in jail.
Duh. If they'd have found it to be real, I mean, he murdered somebody on camera. Yeah, I hope they sent him to jail.
Because of Sheen's involvement with FBI, media coverage was once again raised and brought attention to the whole film series. This media frenzy caused by Sheen had inspired two things to take place. The first was a nice little nod to the situation when Unearthed Films, a distribution label in the U.S., released the film series on DVD. They made both a limited edition box set containing the whole film series, as well as single DVDs available. Regardless of whether the viewers bought the box set or the single DVD, they added a little Easter egg on the disc that contained the flower of Flesh and Blood.
Yeah.
So you have a copy of that on DVD, but then pay attention. There is a snuff cut of the film that was made where the dialogue was all taken out, reducing the runtime of the feature to come in at around 20-minute mark. To view the snuff cut, there's a way to view it if you have the DVD. It's an Easter egg or whatever.
It's wild, man, because I used to have that Unearthed set, and I cannot find it anywhere, but I would love to find that. I don't know where it is. Like, it's somewhere in the move got lost.
Or that sucks, too, because that's like a really, really valuable set. And it's the only official U.S. release that that has ever received.
And we watched the whole thing, man, or at least most of it, in like a, I think, one night kind of setting.
Yeah.
And it was just so bizarre because I can still remember it and going back, like, you know, it brings me back there to that time period. But like, yeah, so Charlie Sheen essentially, you know, screwed everything up. And for some reason, him of all people, like, he decided to be like the moral guy on this. Take the moral high ground.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. I mean, maybe he was embarrassed by it, but honestly, like, had I seen this without knowing anything really about it, and especially, you know, it didn't have, like we were saying, there was no subtitles for it back then. So you don't really know what in the fuck is this, right? And the effects are crazy good in these movies, especially the first couple of movies. Among some of the best makeup effects in horror period at this time. That's how good it was.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, I was really trying to pick out like flaws in that second film. And other than the fact that the samurai guy just talks and looks goofy and that all kind of like throws you off, like, in terms of what's going on in there, it's about as realistic as you can get without like witnessing a murder, I'm pretty sure. Speaking of which, there was a rumor. I don't know if this, nobody's ever been able to discount this rumor or not, but there was a rumor that at least one of the producers of this series, the inspiration for at least The Devil's Experiment and maybe like Flowers of Flesh and Blood, was a real like story about either that he had seen or somebody had told him about seeing actual like snuff film that detailed the very thing that he shows in that first entry.
Right. It was kind of hinted at that, I think. Right.
Yeah. Like that. And that this was going around Asia at that time, that this was a real kind of thing. And they just basically recreated like what he had been told or what I don't know if he'd seen it or been told it, either one, but like, yeah. And that was the kind of the beginning of this. And then kind of expanded upon that with the second one. And the second one to me, if they took out the dialogue and you just saw that, just saw what was going on, I could 100% see why people would be like, oh, that's real.
100%. It looks real, man. And like Robot House was asking what's more convincing, these or August Underground. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen August Underground.
Yeah, me too.
But the makeup effects in this are really great, and they don't look, especially the first couple of episodes of Guinea Pig, they don't look fake, man. They look real. And it's not like they do quick cuts or anything. It is, you're focused right on it. And I'm like, well, how in the fuck did they do that? Like, it looks so great. Like, or so realistic. I don't say great. But, yeah, I guess we'll continue on, though. The first two, man, they were really hitting a nerve, I think, with the horror community. And these movies, too, and I wanted to mention this because I was big into the Japanese hardcore wrestling scene, which also kind of got popular around the same time, the mid to late 80s. You know, the frontier martial arts wrestling, Big Japan Pro Wrestling, and, you know, the IWA King of the Death matches was later on in the 90s. But yeah, I mean, this kind of, it's the setup is kind of similar, like, to a lot of these, like, the introductions, of course, the language is the same and everything. It really feels like something you shouldn't be watching.
You know? Until you get to the third one. And then you get a drastic shift in both like tone and realism. And I don't understand why. It's not really for me to understand, though, why like these Asian filmmakers did the shit they did. I mean, I've got a movie called Scissor Penis. I don't know why the fuck like that exists. Like, I'll never be able to understand it. But
the only thing that's for sure about Oriental horror is nothing's for sure.
That's right. So the third, I guess what's widely considered to be the third entry into this franchise is probably one of my least favorites, which is He Never Dies, which came out in 1986, which is not really a snuff film. It has, it looks like it has the same effects, but it's actually made like a film in a way. Mm-hmm. They actually made like somebody's, you know, cinematically making a film, I guess, like as cinematic as these movies can get.
But they hired like it was an American actor. So it's so weird. Like the guy was speaking in English, and then they overdubbed him in Japanese, and then they had the subtitles in English. So there's a lot going on. Yep. But
to be like the what is he, like a broadcast, like a news broadcaster or something, explaining this?
Yeah, kind of speaking about bizarre like conditions across the globe or whatever. And I was going to call this guy Hakushi, but it's Hideshi. Is the focus of this episode. And the whole point is like, he can't die. Like he tries to slit his wrists, kill himself in a variety of ways, but that's the whole gimmick is, and well, the name of the damn episode is He Never Dies. And there's a lot of dark humor in this episode here. It is a vast departure from the first two episodes.
Yeah.
Makeup effects are still pretty good in it. But yeah, I mean, this is not one of the better episodes in the series, I don't think either.
Well, it's just like, you can't go from that shit that we just watched into this, because while the effects are still great, like it is very comedic and darkly humorous and tough. So it's based around a real condition that where people couldn't feel pain. Like people would amputate or accidentally like have things like, you know, amputated or major injuries, but they never felt it. They never felt any pain. And so they kind of expanded upon that idea by like, what if there was a guy that could never die? And like, no matter what he did, you know, to try to do that to himself. And I mean, it's a cool enough premise, I guess, but like the way they execute it is that by the end of the movie, his head's on like a table, and his friends are coming in there, and everybody's just joking around and shit. You're just kind of like, right, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, his head like, is still alive.
His head's doing one-liners. It's like Rodney Dangerfield by the end of it.
Yeah.
So
I remember us watching this, though, and like, this is a very brief episode, too. It's 39 minutes in length, so not a very long episode there. But it was a weird weird third episode. Like you had two pretty much consistent, which I mean, they were torture stories. So I guess that they wanted to try something different, with the third one, and they did. And yeah, it's definitely one of the more meh episodes when it comes to the guinea pig franchise. But I mean, it's still interesting. Like the decapitated head effect and stuff was pretty good. And the makeup effects were pretty good. So
it's just, I don't know, man, like compared to a lot of the others in this series, it's very, even, I mean, it, all of them are bizarre, but it's just, the tone of this is all over the place. I'm not sure like why they did any of it.
No, me either. But yeah, there are a lot of people in the chat. We appreciate everybody tuning in. We've got 92 people watching for Guinea Pig Man.
Well,
holy shit.
You know, Guinea Pig is a popular franchise. I think they're going to remake this with the Scream producers, I'm pretty sure.
Well, there is an American Guinea Pig series that Stephen Biro of Unearth Films has been producing. So we're not talking about those, though. We're just talking about the OG Japanese movies tonight. So, all right, next one up, I mean, we can do a flip of a coin, because I don't, this is where the lineage, like as far as chronologically, like is kind of up in the air. Both of these movies, let's see, He Never Dies was 86.
Mm-hmm.
In Wikipedia, it is Mermaid in a Manhole from 88. And this is one that was also written and directed by Hideki Hino.
This one was released on July 25th, 1988. It is considered to be, I think, the fourth one in this series. Although that, the like I said, the order of these get mixed up all the time.
Because there's a couple of different dates for Devil Woman Doctor. One is 86. I think the book has it as 86.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is 1990. So, I don't know. I mean, we weren't there. I don't know. But we'll talk about all of them.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
End of the day, it really doesn't matter. But this one is another one. The two most effective ones in this series were basically done by the same guy. And it's based on the manga created by the guy that directed it, Hideki Hino. For some reason, and I could not tell you why, but for some reason, this is the one I remember the most from us watching it the first time.
I don't know why that is.
But.
I think so, too. This one had the most effect on me because it's just so goddamn bizarre. I mean, it's just so weird. And it's the one that kind of like, I mean, it kind of has a plot compared to some of these other ones. So the whole deal is this guy is an artist and he loves, and I don't know why, I don't know if he finds some really interesting things in the sewer, but loves to paint portraits in the sewer system in, you know, Hiroshi City, Japan. And he also has memories of his childhood and paints memories of this beautiful mermaid that he saw as a kid. And people are like, oh, you must have, you know, you were dreaming about a damn mermaid, you weirdo, right? And I think there's a story going on that his wife is recently passed away or is gravely ill or something like that. So he's already got issues. But he's down there. He finds like his old teddy bear or something down there, and he's excited about that. And then he looks over and sees this fucking mermaid. She's sick. She's laying like, come on, help me.
Yeah, basically. Right? Yeah.
And this guy wants to save her. What's the guy's name? They do Mr. Hideki. I got to do this, Uncle Bill.
Oh God.
From Tokyo, Japan, Mr. Hideki.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that.
That is like one of the best theme songs ever. So the reason why this one is so memorable, though, is because no matter what this guy tries to do to kind of like save this mermaid that he's found in this, you know, manhole. By the way, did you notice there's like an aborted baby in the manhole as well, like in the sewage system? Like when he first like goes over there, I was like, oh, God.
Well, that kind of plays on like there's a little bit of a twist ending in this, too. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Yeah.
But she is like rotting in his bathtub. So, and here's where the part comes where I think what makes this so memorable to both of us. So as she's rotting away in this bathtub, he's an artist and whatnot. So he just decides like he really wants to like preserve her memory and preserve the memory of the nostalgia of the whole thing. So he starts to like use the pus and stuff that's coming out of these big pustule things that are forming on her to like paint a picture of her.
Richard Gere. I didn't think we'd be talking about Richard Gere tonight.
No, me either.
Guinea
pigs. God, that'd be hardcore. Shove guinea pigs up your ass.
Well, that's after you use gerbils for a long time and you're just not getting the
Yeah, I mean You got to move up. You go from like gerbils to hamsters to like Boston crabs. Wait, is there? Yeah, no, hermit crabs, not Boston crabs. That's a move. Then you go right into guinea pigs.
But yeah, I mean, the most
touching entry of the guinea pig really is. The weird thing about it is, it kind of is though.
Yeah,
it's the most romantic, if you can call it that. And I'm not even kidding. Like, it is like kind of plays out that way. Like, it's the saddest.
If disgusting, okay. Baby. If disgusting.
It is. It's like, it's street trash level goo, too. Like, when she goes full on, like, whatever, you know.
Right.
Diseased or whatever.
You could like taste the rainbow of puss, baby.
Right.
He's wanting to paint her portraits. She has got nodules and fucking boils and shit all over, and they're getting worse.
And they're spewing. That's my favorite part too. It's like at some point they're shooting out like just like streams of this shit like all over the place.
Yeah, like so. And then he like wants to use her pus to paint the picture that he's working on.
Yeah,
and he's got little jars there to catch the pus as it's draining, and. Like, he's got these goofy-ass reactions every time something pops on her and oozes out and shit. He's like, oh!
Yeah, he's very excited through the whole thing, yeah.
And she's... Eventually, she's, like, begging him, like, just... I'm sick, I can't go on, or whatever. And then it continues to get worse. You think that he's going to finally end it, or whatever, but she... She gets worse and worse, and there's like fucking eels and centipedes and shit coming out of her. Maggots.
Like with Halloween 3 where they put the mask on. All that shit's coming out of her body, basically. Yeah,
and she's draining like rainbow pus, and it looks like there's sea scallops and stuff all over her.
It's like red lobster after shit's been sour for a couple months.
And these they do have real worms in this too.
Well, of course they do. Like, that's the one thing about these Asian films. They never tried to even like do any kind of animal. Like, you'd never see anything at the beginning of an Asian film from the 80s. It was like no animals were hurt in the making of this film. All the animals were hurt.
I didn't
give a
shit about
films.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't care about that shit. There's also this little subplot too with his neighbors who are always kind of suspicious about his behavior. And they're almost like comedic characters, right? When you say the neighbors were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the girl's pleading with him to kill her and all this. And, you know, eventually he does. He chops her up into itty bitty little pieces, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And... as it turns out, this one does have a little bit of a twist towards the end of it. So evidently the whole mermaid thing was just something in his head. And he had murdered over the course of those days, his pregnant wife and the newborn baby. And they talked about that at the end. This was 1988. They talked about that. So, this is like when it comes to something it'll be like burnt into your brain scenes from this movie. This is definitely one of those because this was like probably been 20 years since I'd seen this at least. And I remember most of it. I was like, God damn. Yeah.
I think a big part of why that is with this one too, is because like it deviates so far away from anything that makes any goddamn sense that you just remember it because of how insane it is. Because, like, first of all, you have to follow through that a guy would find a human mermaid hybrid in a sewage system. You got to buy that concept, right? Then he takes it home and it starts to rot, and then pus and shit starts squirting out of it like a water hose. You got to buy that. But then you buy the idea that his reaction to all this would be he wants to paint a pig like a fucking painting with all of her pus. And then you got to, at the very end, just sum it all up that he's just insane and just like I've got other films that kind of like either are on the same level of crazy or top it in terms of crazy kind of plot lines, but like this was the first one like that I'd ever seen. anything like that. Like, there's nothing else that really compares to this. It's not a movie, so I'm not sure what you would call it. Like,
yeah, it's the streets of Okinawa is where this took place, evidently, according to Wikipedia. Yeah, this is, and this is interesting because you were talking about last week, body horror. This is essentially kind of a body horror movie, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, in some way or another, yeah, this is probably the most body horror of all these, really.
Yeah, it's generally considered the best of the series and definitely a fan favorite. And like we were saying, Mermaid in the Manhole, that name alone, you're like,
yeah.
And Matt was, that's the name of, that's the name of it. And then that hits you right there. And then when you watch it, you're like, what the fuck is this? This is so, there's nothing else like it either. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's out there for today's standards. In 1988 is when this fucking thing was released. It's very bizarre, very out there. And somebody mentioned, which I hadn't seen this, that it was an inspiration for the Benicio del Toro movie, The Shape of Water, which I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, me either.
But if that's the case, that's pretty cool. But yeah, visually interesting, great effects in this as well, too. Close-up shots of just disgusting, nasty, bloody splatter film goodness as well. So if you're into just disgusting, gory shit, I mean, this is definitely for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the best. Probably should have been included in that body horror kind of series thing. It's probably one of the best of those weird, yeah, just creature kind of body horror films.
All right, so I guess before we talk about the final two entries, which, I mean, they are what they are. We'll talk about them. You want to talk about the serial killer in Japan and that whole story, because there is the story of that is in this book as well.
Yeah. So unfortunately for this series and for probably Asian film and horror films, especially in general, right around this time, there was a serial killer. I'm going to butcher this, but the Otoku killer probably, which Otoku roughly translates to nerd in English. So this guy apparently had an unhealthy obsession with anime, hentai, manga, whatever the fuck, however people pronounce that.
Tang.
Computers, comic books, all that stuff. He was also deformed. I think it's something with his hands and his wrists were like fused together in some way. So he was basically like made fun of his entire life for some of these things too. And right around the time that these movies started to gain in popularity, it came out that he was a serial killer. He was also a well, we can't even say that on here anymore. He was also a not so great guy. And did a bunch of really horrible things, including like a series of murders. And not only did he commit like a series of murders, but he was also like an Albert Fish type who would write to like the family members of the people that he killed, explaining like exactly what he had done. So anyway, as you can imagine, at this point in time, after all this was found out, like nobody was really thrilled about having this style of movie around. And so, based on what he had done, these movies kind of like started to take, and movies like this started to take the brunt of bad press and things like that too. But amongst like all of the things they found at this guy's house, and when they searched his home after they, you know, kind of discovered what was going on, of course, they found one of the guinea pig films, which they believed and which was believed to have inspired him, said the sources claim he was in possession of Mermaid in a Manhole, and others claim it to be Flower of Flesh and Blood. Yeah. I would venture to say it was probably at least Flower of Flesh and Blood by some of the claims in here.
Yeah. And this was, you know, in the late 80s, and the series kind of wrapped up just quickly after that. So, and this was weird too, because this was such a, almost like a, you know, 15 minute of fame this series had, and yeah, it was gone. It, you know, 85 through 89 primarily, I think. And then it was it, man. I mean, I know that there's one credit in here, 1990. I don't think it came out in 1990. I don't know, but I don't know. We'll talk about it. But yeah, a lot of different things, I think, led to, and is still why, possibly, we can't get copies of this officially re-released or anything. Like, this is one of the few things where, oddly enough, you know, the last physical release of this here in the U.S. was from Earner Films over 20 years ago. Right? And
yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you hear about stuff like this that happens all the time. You know, certain events kind of change the course of films in a country and things like that. I think that 9/11 did that here. Like, there were a bunch of movies that were slated to have, like, you know, things with terrorism in it that just completely got cut because of that. So, yeah, you could just see how this would derail, like, a series of films. Like, and especially the fact that he had it in his possession. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure the guy, like, had a bunch of shit in his possession, but ultimately he was proven to be, you know, sane, and executed, thankfully. So, I mean, that was the end of that guy, but it did cause quite a bit of problem for the film industry making any kind of like films like this.
Mm-hmm. So we'll continue on here. And this is another one that's very confusing in the timeline. Android of Notre Dame from 1989, although a lot of versions of the movie have this labeled as Guinea Pig 2. So who the fuck knows, man? Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, it's just very confusing.
It is. There's this timeline after this gets really screwed up.
Yeah.
Because they kind of have to, it kind of has to be screwed up, because it is so, after that, it becomes much more underground, really.
Oh, man. Radhammer, that's interesting. What if Air 444 did a box set?
Yeah.
It would sell out very quickly.
There has to be something to this, man. There has to be something to why nobody up to this point has ever done those movies, because those movies are infamous. Like, I don't know if it's a censorship, a rights issue. I don't know what it is, but, like, I would have thought they would have already been done.
Well, I remember, and I believe this kind of predates, well, it was right when I got on the internet in, like, the late 97, 98, I was doing a lot of wrestling tape trading, and these tapes were high on the want list then.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be very interesting to see, and I don't even know what these films were shot on. Were they shot on film? You know, how would they?
It doesn't look like it. Certain ones don't look like it, and then certain ones do. Like, the first two look like they were shot on VHS almost. Like, and the third and fourth one definitely looked like they were shot on film somehow. Maybe 16 millimeter for one, maybe 30. I don't know.
Hmm. But anyway. But
real quick, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Merry Christmas to everybody on here.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yep. It's good everybody's joining us.
Yeah, Adrian James, and I don't know how many likes we've got, but we should at least have 92, because there's 92 people in here. It literally takes you fucking not even 2 seconds to like the goddamn thing. So get to it, motherfuckers.
God almighty, that's fucking, that's very direct.
So this one, though, and we got to put this one over, because I was very excited to see that he was starring in this. WWE Little Man Hall of Famer Little Tokyo is in this as a dwarf scientist, Uncle Bill.
Yep.
You can still call him dwarf, right?
I guess.
Little Tokyo!
Coming down the aisle from Tokyo, Japan.
Weighing in at 57 pounds. Mm-hmm. It's little Tokyo. Yeah, his sister is seriously ill and wants to find a way, find a cure, or an essence to preserve his sister. And he begins to use, I mean, I guess this one kind of has a plot too, begins to use.
This one actually humans, has the most plot, yeah.
Humans as guinea pigs in a bizarre experiment gone awry, right? Little Tokyo going mad.
Oh, shit. Oh. You getting her riled up, all this death talk. She's going to try to kill you.
Now, to be fair, I only watched the first few minutes of Android of Notre Dame, so I didn't get to revisit it fully. But anytime a little person's involved, especially Little Tokyo, I can't say anything bad about it.
No, it literally is the definition of this series of films, though. Like the guinea pig series, it's about like this scientist who needs to find a guinea pig to perform experiments on to see like if he can fix like this his sister's illness. So like it's just a series of different experiments run on.
It's almost like a sci-fi movie as well. Some science fiction thrown in there for Little Tokyo.
Another one that has great effects too.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one was another most of these are only like what is it, 57 minutes, something like that. Not very long. But I believe Mermaid in the Manhole and Android of Notre Dame were made by newer production companies. I think that was what I'd read on. Like the other ones were made by a different company that went bankrupt, and these two were made by a different company that used a little bit of a bigger budget, possibly.
Yeah. This one, though, for some reason, like, I think it might be the actors involved in it. It kind of goofy as well. Like, they're really, like, overacting and stuff. So it makes it pretty clear that it's a movie, and so you're not really, like, thrown into that idea that you're watching something actually happening. But there is, like, eye removal. There are, like, tongue experiments. There's a bunch of, like, crazy stuff, including like almost like a Hellraiser-esque kind of skinned person thing.
Uncle Frank.
Yep.
Uncle Hiroshi in this one.
Yeah. It's kind of wild, man.
Uncle Tajiri.
Uncle Tajiri.
So
Uncle Funaki. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Android of Notre Dame is one of the more talked about episodes as well. Like, I would say the first two, Mermaid in a Manhole and Android of Notre Dame, are probably the most popular, right? That would be the most popular four. And then you've got these other ones here, which this last one, man, so in the
I can't stand this one. Like, I tried to watch it. I was just like, fuck, I ain't watching this shit.
Yeah, in the book, this one is listed as coming out in 1986 on IMDb and Wikipedia. It's 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? But yeah, this was credited as the final episode, Devil, Doctor, Woman, which features, you know, the Devil, Doctor, Woman's a damn drag queen, Uncle Bill.
Right.
Can we still say drag queen?
No, I don't think you should.
Why?
You already did. So. Here we are.
I mean, it's a drag queen named Peter.
Yep.
I did get that. Who is, you know, again, this is no plot, conducting experiments on people with weird disorders that make their head explode. Even little babies' heads explode in the Devil Woman Doctor. And this was another brief one too, right?
This one kills me. There's like a Quato style thing growing on the stomach.
Yeah.
Like,
there is.
And it's a lot of slapstick comedy and humor and stuff like that mixed between this woman who's like supposedly able to She's like practice, like a doctor or something that can cure really weird disorders of people that are really rare. And there's just like some special effects kind of stuff put on people. It looks goofy as shit and doesn't look anything realistic like the other
special. Right. Right. Yeah, I was not a big fan of this one either. I mean, it does seem like it was kind of brief. I think it was still like 45 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't over long as this, none of these. I mean, the longest one of these is like an hour maybe or something. So you could kick, like you could probably watch all these in one afternoon easy if you really wanted to
catch
yourself.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing that, but I think we did though. At least we watched like multiple ones of them.
I think over the span of like a couple of nights, we watched it all, if I remember correctly. Because, yeah, we were watching some crazy shit around this time period. You was buying the craziest shit, like the Necromantic movies, I think, was another
one that you bought at that time. I was really into the extreme horror at that time. Because, well, it was just coming out, like where you could buy it at like Best Buy and stuff like we were talking about. Like it became like a thing there for a brief period of time where you could get all that stuff pretty much commercially. And I was just buying anything that they put out like at the, and saw some crazy, crazy stuff at that point in time, including this, which.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This was some wild shit, man, for sure. It was a weird time too. A lot of people don't talk about it. Like, you know, briefly, we talked to Stephen Biro at the Horror Hound show, and I was like, yeah, I remember buying this stuff in Best Buy stores, and it just doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem possible now. Well, of course, now, because Best Buy doesn't sell physical media anymore, but that they would, I mean, it was pretty much whatever was out. They had, you know, they had the Necromantic movies as well, you know. But yeah, I mean, the Unearthed released the DVD set of this in 2004. And this, to my knowledge, this was the first time anybody in America had seen these films with the subtitles where you can actually follow what was going on. Although I don't know how important it was.
Yeah. I don't know how much that helped really.
And special features, deluxe treatment and all that. That set has been out of print for at least 15 years or longer and is going for $200 to $300 on eBay. So there's a huge market for these movies. I don't know what the deal is. I was told that there's no way that these will come back out. I think that this is one of those occasions, and like this will make people think that I'm really fucking disturbed, but this is true. Like, this was like going back to like, this is nostalgia for me at this point, because this was such a eye-opening series of movies that was so different than anything else at the time, definitely in the 80s. And really, even now, like, there's nothing, would you see, what could you think of anything?
I mean, the only thing I can compare these to are like other Asian horror films, like I said, like Men Beyond the Sun and things like that. Like that's it. There really is nothing like these movies. I mean, there were movies that were influenced by them that tried to do them, like like August Underground ones and things like that. But like, they're just, I don't know. They're just, they're in a class all by themselves, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, error 444444444444. If they want to do it, more power to them. I would love to see it like a deluxe box set edition. Do a damn 4K, whatever you do.
We need to try to get that Stephen Biro guy on here and figure out, like, what is the deal with those movies? Like, why won't they be released? Like, some sort of idea of what happened there.
Yeah. He's more than welcome to come on. We're still waiting to hear back from Demon Dave. We'll let him promote the Pharma. Okay. The Pharma.
He got the Pharma trading cards or not?
He's just getting them printed. They're drying off in Saudi Arabia.
You might get an autograph with the actual guy that played the Pharma.
The Pharma cards. So we may
hit one in every 69 packs, brother. has a Fama autograph.
We need to get Demon Dave on and Steve Biro, get him on to talk about these. You know, not only he's got a lot of stuff to talk about, but I think the most infamous set that they ever did was that guinea pig collection for sure. And for those that have not seen it, and I'll promote this again, although
yeah.
I paid for this fucking thing. I really shouldn't, but second sloppysecondsales.com has a complete like copy of that set on one Blu-ray for like $11. And you know, the cover's definitely bootlegish.
Yeah.
Not crazy well done. It's on a a Blu-ray R or whatever. Just a white disc. But this is really like the only affordable way you can check these movies out. And in my opinion, they're worth checking out. Now, you may just want to watch. I would recommend definitely the first two episodes and Mermaid in a Manhole. Those would be the top three for me. What about you? Yeah.
Definitely just watch Flower of Flesh and Blood just because like it's so the effects are so good. And yeah, I would say Devil's Experiment too, because those two kind of like flow together pretty well. And then like Mermaid in the Manhole, and like that, you're good. Like, I don't really recommend any of the other ones, to be honest. Yeah,
you can get a good feeling of what those movies were all about, and the effects, the gore and everything. And this was popular here in the U.S. around this time period too, in the 80s. But I mean, these were, the effects in these movies were very realistic. And they're not quick cuts or anything.
No,
it's focusing in on this shit, and it's very impressive. Still to this day, it holds up.
So there is a couple other things to talk about though with this series, and I'm not sure if it's on that sloppy segment. Probably is if it's just a port of the box set. There's a making of disc too that came with that set, and I think that's about 45-50 minutes long.
I think they did two different making of documentaries as well. I'm not sure if I know there's one of them on this set, but it doesn't list it, so I don't know if both are on there or not. But yeah, they did do two separate documentaries, on the guinea pig films.
There is also a unofficial, seventh film that's actually a lot of people thought was part of the series, which is actually not, called Lucy Sky Diamond, that was released in 1990. That is basically just an entry, that looks a lot like those films, but was not kind of like released in that same category. It was released by a company called JHV, which was a distribution company responsible for the guinea pig films on VHS in Japan. So it looks a lot like them, not associated with them. It's essentially a story of like, I think a woman wakes up in a hospital and the hospital's crazy. Mm-hmm. And she's just kind of like being tortured, of course, throughout it.
And that's the hardest one to track down too, right?
I think so, yeah, because it's not really, it's only available on a bootleg of anything, yeah. And no, I don't think it has any subtitles either. If you do find it, like, you're going to be, like, trying to figure out what in the hell's going on. I mean, you'd be trying to figure that out anyway, really, even if it did have subtitles. But
thanks for subscribing, sir. Also, another fun little anecdote, too. Mary Tomei, who's the actress that played the mermaid in Mermaid in the Manhole, completely disappeared in 1988 from the entire scene. Nobody knows what the hell happened to her. She quit acting. She went into hiding, I guess. Hopefully she wasn't murdered by some weirdo in Japan. But that's another interesting little story related to the guinea pig films. And like I was going to say, though, I think that this series is one of those series that if they were to re-release it, I think that it would find an entire new generation of fans that don't know about it. Cause a lot of people, man, like have heard of it, that we're in, you know, the hardcores. They said, well, I've heard of it. I have no way of watching it. You know, it's not readily available out there. So I think that this would definitely be one of those cases where it would get a new fan base. But I don't know if it's one of those deals that whoever owns it is just very hesitant to do anything with it because of all the issues in the past. You had the Charlie Sheen thing. You had the serial killer bullshit. And, yeah, it just has, you know, the series does have kind of like a red flag all around it. People just don't want to touch it. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But you would think Unearthed Films would love to re-release this again here in the
US. Well, somebody said this in here, and I gotta think that this is probably true, that it is some sort of rights issue. Like, man, there's no way in hell that somebody, if it wasn't Unearthed, then somebody else would not have re-released these films. If you could, like, if that was a possibility, these films would be out. Like, considering the stuff they put out nowadays on Blu-ray, and like, I mean, we're getting Rumpelstiltskin in soon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, these movies would definitely be out.
Yeah.
Would HD, this is a good question, actually. Would HD ruin the realism of the Guinea Pig series?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't even know how it was actually shot. Like, I don't even know if it would be one of those deals where they could even do it in HD. Because it is full frame. It's kind of rough looking. But, again, this was from a DVD source 20 years ago. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the manner in which these films were released in Japan. I don't know the format, what they used. There's a lot of questions about the series that have never really been answered. And this is still such a crazy underground. And it's weird because you're thinking it shouldn't be because of how infamous it is. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of information really out there about this series.
No, there needs to be a lot more information because I want to know what the hell's going on so I can find these.
Yep.
But Stephen LaPierre says that he's got a old XT German steelbook of the Guinea Pig movies. If you want to sell that to me, I'll be happy to buy it from you.
$5.
$5.
The Rock Free Party.
But this is it's an interesting series, man, to say the least. Like you were saying earlier, I don't even know what to compare it to, but I feel like anybody that's into extreme horror, like, should watch this at least once. Like, it really is up there with stuff like Necromantic and, you know, the other Asian films like Untold Story and Red to Kill and stuff like that. Like, I mean, it's not cinematic like those movies, but it's hardcore like those movies and very graphic as well.
So we'll go through some questions here. We got a little bit of time left. Normally these are what, about 90 minutes? Is that what you normally do with these?
Yeah.
They released it in 4K. It would be brutal. Would it be badass?
It would be badass and brutal, but I don't know. Like, looking at it, like, if you could tell the effects were fake or not, like, I don't think you could in the second one. I really don't.
I think that it would only make them look even more, you know, badass and brutal. Where's the remake of Faces of Death you guys have been reporting on for 20 years?
I don't know.
They finally did do the remake of Pet Sematary. We were talking about that for almost that long.
That was a good one. I love that one.
Faces of Death is one of those things that sound like it came close a couple of times, but yeah, not really. And also is asking what we got each other for Christmas. What'd you give me, Uncle Bill?
Just love.
What about a rim job, buddy? Come on.
No, I'd rather just give you love. Oh, now don't make that damn sound.
Come on.
Oh. Maple syrup, Uncle Bill. Oh. I don't do that.
Motionless Zombie, what are y'all's thoughts on the Superman teaser, Uncle Will? Superman teaser.
Haven't seen it.
There's another.
I've heard Superman. A lot of people like bitch about it, but I haven't seen it.
Rambo's talking about, what was it, Crypto, the dog is in the, And I don't know shit about comic books. Like, I was never a big comic guy or anything. But Superman had a fucking dog.
I guess. I mean, that sounds like something DC would have done early
Crypto,
on. Crypto, yeah.
The dog. And the dog's evidently in the trailer. Oh, man.
Now, that I am excited about. Matt brings up the idea of that Night 90 thing. But that's been a rumor going around forever now. Because Felcher was talking about that like a long, long time ago.
Yeah, Felcher's been working on it off and on. And I think he had said that Sony is doing it. So Sony is releasing it, doing the Savini cut of Night 90, which, I mean, I'm okay with. The movie's okay. Do I think it's nearly as good as the original? I don't. I mean, I know some people do. I think Patricia Tallman's fucking terrible in that movie. But it's just me.
God damn, she ain't that bad. She ain't great, but she, I mean, Judith O'Day ain't great either,
and
really.
The supporting cast, and that's pretty fucking awful, too. Honestly, like, Tony Todd is good.
What? The fuck? Who?
What?
Tom Towles? He's fucking awesome.
Like Tom Towles in it, and Bill Butler, man, I love him. He's the nicest guy ever was, but he's like just a fucking...
Bill Butler's not good, though. You're right. I mean, he's not awful, but he's not great in that.
He didn't fit in that at all. And then the whole thing with Bill Moseley in the opening shot, like, that was like the most... Yeah. So, I mean, I don't hate it, but like, I'm definitely not jacking off all around it like everybody doing backflips and their own shit over it. But,
Are you sure?
No. Robot House and this series is much better than stuff like August Underground because it's not nearly as long. The short length gives it more credibility, I feel like, with the guinea pig movie. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just they don't ask too much of your time, and I appreciate that because nowadays they ask way too much of your damn time. Let's see. Superman got hit by a can. That sounds great. Why do they continue to fucking keep making these? How many Superman movies did they make with the one fucking dude? How many did they make?
Who?
What was the guy, the British guy? What was his name?
Henry Cavill?
Yes.
I don't know. Too many. If they made more than one.
I don't think that... As far as singular Superman movies, I think they just made that one, and then they had him as, like, he was in my fucking Justice League movies, and he was in Batman versus Superman.
I remember going to see that one Superman movie at the theater. I think it was the first one. Just like, God damn, this is fucking awful. Even, like, watching it direct, there's nothing good about that movie. Anyway, I fucking hate superhero movies, so that's probably not.
Yeah, I have no interest in that Superman movie.
I never did figure out who that guy was. I could never find like any kind of card or anything. I know he gave me one. I have no idea where it's at, and there's nothing on that would like give you an idea of who made it or anything. So unless that guy comes forward and sees one of these shows, I'm never gonna know.
Bill Butler is not good. Should be a t-shirt. Yeah. That'd be no. I wouldn't do him that way.
I like Bill Butler.
He is a good guy. Favorite Christmas songs, Uncle Bill? Do you have a favorite?
No, not really.
This is so funny. This gives me because we were opening gifts earlier this evening at my in-laws. You know, the baby nephew and the older brother come in out of town and all that, and we opened gifts and everything. And they started playing, you know, they like just classic country stuff. They started playing Thistlehair the Christmas Bear from Alabama. And
fucking sorry about
that. The little nephew, Noah's his name. He's like 2.5 years old. And they started playing the same old shit they always play, like play Fancy, play Jolene or whatever. And I just, out of the blue, I was like, well, Alexa, play Motorhead. And they started playing Ace of Spades, right? That was the only thing, like every time you said play Motorhead, Ace of Spades. And this little kid fucking lit up like it was the 4th of July or something. Like
He probably never heard of it.
He started saying himself after they would like try to interrupt it and play something else. He said, Alexis, of course, play Motorhead. So he caught on to it.
Yeah.
And it just fucking tickled me. I actually recorded some of it. But he's a new fan of Motorhead was born tonight, boys.
That's killer, though. For those people that want to do something funny at your Christmas like gatherings or whatever, sneak in Fear's song Fuck Christmas, because it starts off like a regular kind of like Christmas song and then immediately goes into that chorus, and you'll really have like a fun time with your family members at any gathering.
Batman versus Superman and Justice League were the only other two movies that he did as Superman. So I guess they wanted to just reboot it again. They're like, ah, fuck it. Well, what year was Man of Steel? I don't even remember how long.
I can't remember either. I blocked that out of my memory.
Awful. Fucking terrible.
Shitty old movies.
Yeah, I mean, a Christmas horror movies that we hate. We did a Fears episode that where we talked about some of the shitty ones. And that was last year we did that. But yeah, I mean, that'd be the worst holiday horror films of all time or something like that. Motorhead did do the killer version. Well, that was just Lemmy, I think, of Run, Run, Rudolph. That's a pretty good Christmas song. That's so killer. Everybody.
Motorhead.
Yeah, everybody got some Ace of Spades in there. But my Vinegar Syndrome order did ship, I think, Friday. Did yours ship yet?
No, I haven't heard anything about it. Yeah. I'm not in any big hurry to get anything from Vinegar Syndrome.
Man of Steel was 2013. Wow, is that long ago, huh?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Interesting.
Have they made any decent movies like that, honestly?
Well, I mean, that movie made a fortune, to be fair, but I mean, it sucks. Like, I remember, I think did we do an on the road for that? I know that you and I went and saw it. I can't remember if we did an on the road for it or not.
I don't remember either.
Yeah. But yeah, guys, I guess that is it. We started this one a little bit late. And I still have to work tomorrow. Are you off the week or no?
I'm on call, but I'm not actively working. So I just have to like be there for emergencies or shit.
Well, Sarah's not working until Thursday, so I won't be woke up real early due to her fucking... Here's what she does. She gets an alarm at 6 o'clock in the fucking morning to go...
I'd kill somebody.
6 o'clock in the morning to get up, kick back in the recliner and watch TV and just really go back to sleep for another hour. Like, why? What the hell?
Why not just stay in the bed? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't ever get it. But yeah,
she got a routine.
She won't be doing that for the next couple of days. But yeah, I'm working Monday and Tuesday. But yeah, I guess this is the last live stream that we're doing until after Christmas and everything. So
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
we've got like what this whole next week and probably into the weekend where I don't really have anything planned, to be honest.
No, I mean, I think the next big thing that we're going to try to do is a 2024 year in review show.
Yeah.
And we're going to do another, and people need to seriously check out the Dead Pit is Watching shows, because I think that is something totally different that really nobody else is doing on YouTube. As a feature show, we're going through a plethora of different reviews, and I don't know. I mean, I actually think it's pretty good. So if people haven't checked that out, we've got 5 episodes of those already in the can and they're up, and we're going to be working on the 6th episode here pretty soon. I think we're going to maybe do an X-rated episode.
Killer. Okay.
We need to, because I've got like, I don't know how many fucking X-rated movies we've got to talk about. But
so I do know, though, what's going to be my next topic for this series. So whenever the new exploitation comes up, I couldn't think of another better way to describe it than this. So I'm just going to tell you what I've got written down here.
What you got?
Under Siege movies, not Steven Seagal, but these are movies where like a group of people are held captive somewhere and they're under siege by something. So there's a bunch of movies like this. And I know the one that most, the template for this kind of movie to me is like Assault on Precinct 13, but there's a bunch of other movies like this. So if anybody wants to get in on that, and I know Matt's been wanting to talk about one movie in particular that's going to be in this. So Matt, you better get your shit together for this one, because it's coming up next.
Under Siege and Under Siege 2.
Yeah. Both with Gary Busey.
Have you done an Ozploitation episode yet? Like that would be another.
That'd be a good one. I just don't like those movies. I don't like Australian fucking movies at all.
Oh, you're going to get Australians, mate. All right. So, but yeah, I mean, finally we did. I'm hoping everybody enjoyed the guinea pig episode. I know we've been threatening it for a long time. We did have over 100 people in here. So that's pretty good. I'll take that for guinea pig talk all day long. But yeah, if anybody's interested again and you want to see these movies, this is probably the most affordable way to do so. Sloppy Second Films, Sloppy Second Sales has this for like $11. It is a Blu-ray R, but it has all of the movies in it. And I think there is a documentary in it as well. So check it out that way and stay tuned to the site. Hope everybody has a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Feliz Navidad. What else?
I don't know.
Pampiro Purpo.
Yeah, that too.
That's a wrestler, I think. But Pampiro. yeah. We will catch you guys next time on the original Horror Talk Radio Show. It's over at
DaveBarrel.com.
I want all these people to click everything they're supposed to click.
You haven't been liking them, you haven't been subscribing to them, you haven't clicked the bell or notification or anything like that.
Folks, why don't you click the like button?
You hate us? Do you not want to see us succeed?
Why don't you click the heart button?
Is this something that you have against our particular show?
Why don't you subscribe?
You should click on one of them buttons right now if you want us to continue to breathe greatness into your life.
There's all kinds of wonderful shirts over at shop.deadpits.com. Simply the best horror shirts on TeePublic. There are others, but they all suck. You can get some Dead Pit Radio shirts. You can get Last South on the left, The Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw. Oh, wait, you can't say Texas Chainsaw. All kinds of shirts, folks. You're gonna love them. shop.deadpit.com.
Special thanks goes out to our supporters on Patreon. You know what kind of stuff you can get on Patreon, Uncle Bill, starting at only $1 a month?
What's that?
Access to every Dead Pit show since 2005. We got almost 200 fan commentaries that we've done over the decades.
Here's what other fucking Patreons do. They're like, hey, give us money, and then we'll let you see a video early that we're going to release like a fucking week from now, and then that's all we're going to give you. Meanwhile, we have a literal jukebox full of songs, thousands of reviews. I don't even know how many shows are up on there now that we've done over the years.
Hundreds of thousands.
You need to figure this out now and subscribe to us on Patreon and YouTube and Instagram. Help us to 1 million. The road to a million subscribers starts today.
So Dead Pit on Patreon.com. Join today. Tiers start at only $1, but I'd recommend at least the $10 tier.
You can do 50. The stock market's crashing around us, folks, but send us money.